I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 518. The miserable sarcasm of 2016 is gone. I promise. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
I don't feel like I have talked to you for like 2 weeks. It feels so long.
It's been a while. Since we talked.
We didn't do a show for Christmas, even though we saw each other at Christmas.
Yeah.
But like, I think the holidays just have this weird black hole effect of like it just sucks out time and passages of your memory.
Well, it does. It does because like especially if you're the type of person that like has a lot of visiting to do. So like if you're doing multi-home like holidays, you're kind of like Groundhog Day-ing it where you're reliving the holiday again someplace else. So you like lose a day because you redid the day, but with different people. Then you have your friends, you know, giving type thing where you're going over to your friends to celebrate the same holiday and you don't have work, so then your internal clock is off because you're like, it should be Friday, but it feels like a Thursday, but it's actually a Sunday, and I don't know what day it is. Who are you, and how did you get in my room? Like, which is a weird thing for me for holidays, you know, even though, you know, I don't do as much traveling and multi-holidaying with people anymore. Like, I've pretty much got it down to, like, a science of where I go and where I don't go. I feel you on that, like, especially when you get, you know, observance holidays, so you're not working, so you got these short weeks, so it all goes all kinds of wrong.
Like,
you feel like
a blur,
time board.
Like the weirdest blur in the world.
Right.
Of time.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we're back.
Yes.
You know, Happy New Year,
Happy New Year, guys.
Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Hanukkah.
Merry, like, Happy Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
Yeah, exactly.
All of that. We said goodbye to 2016.
Fuck that dumpster fire of a year.
I am trying to be and focus on positives for 2017 because I was a miserable, sarcastic so-and-so in 2016.
I mean, that's a very polite way to say that.
I'm being, again, positive.
That was very polite. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were like, I was a miserable see you next Tuesday.
No, I'm trying to use that word less.
I'm saying it more.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And I am trying to really reserve its usage for when it's most appropriate. And not just as a slough off word.
If I can insert it, I am.
Yeah.
That sounds horrible.
You know, everybody has their own resolutions for 2017. Some of us are just a little more positive than others. But I am trying to focus on positives because there's a lot of good things that should be happening this year. And I feel like, you know, I detoxed a little bit from my social media feeds for a bit, which is really hard to do because I work in social media as my day job. But I found that I did better. I slept better. I was less cranky on the days where I was not, like, just enveloped by my Facebook and Twitter feeds. So I'm really trying to focus more on talking with people and positive news and having a positive outlook. I did some things for myself already this year to kick the year off a little bit differently. And I hope that for everyone listening to this podcast, that 2017 is even better for you than 2016 was. Whatever went on last year, you were going through last year, I hope that 2017 brings more positivity and opportunity to you.
Same.
See, right? Didn't that feel good? Right. Didn't that feel good? Yeah.
It did. Yeah. It did.
You know, I hope warm puppies and warm thoughts for everyone.
I adhered to my resolution last year of being less douchey.
Yeah.
Last year, like, 2016,
it really was
the beginning,
last quarter, though, that rocky. Like you amped that up. First 6 months of 2016, you weren't.
It was
really
a little.
The first,
I'd honestly say the first four, I was still really struggling with what being a douche meant to me,
right,
and how to be less of that
right
to other
because
people.
Your definition of being douchey really is not actually other people's definition and also experience of you being douchey to them.
Right. So, like, I had to recalibrate a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I figured out the flow, I was like, all right, totally gonna, like, big toe it, slowly ease my way into being less douchey.
Yeah.
Then I got the hang of it.
I would
then
say
the training wheels came off.
Yeah, I would say that definitely around June, you started hitting your stride.
Of being less douchey.
Of being
absolutely
less douchey.
Yeah.
You know, so let's continue that trend.
Yep, into 2000, super less douchey 2017.
Yeah. Aggro less douchey.
Yes. Yes. So.
I'm all for it. I failed to hit all my gamers' resolutions.
This was a tough year for gaming, I think, for a lot of different people, because so many things were just impacting people on so many different levels that I think, like, you know, all those games that you wanted to play, maybe you didn't play them nearly as much, maybe you didn't get all the achievos you were hoping to get, or maybe, you know, the expectations of a game to come out that was supposed to be, like, awe-inspiring may not have been that for you, looking at you, Left Guardian.
Oh, wait, what? 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 Do I have to stop you right there? Do we have to talk about this right now?
No. I know there's a bunch of people who had a lot of negative things to say about Last Guardian. I'm a third of the way through. Because, like, I'm going through this weird period right now where, like, I'm not playing a lot of games.
Yeah.
Like, I'm playing very little.
I know, you got a lot of things to repeat, but we got to talk about this.
But the fiance actually tricked me the other day, because, like, he was playing at first, and I was like, let me just experience it, because I've never played. Like, I didn't play Ico, and I didn't play Shadow of the Colossus.
You can't.
But, right. But I hadn't played the other ones. So he's like, maybe you should play the other ones before you play this. I'm like, well, let me, like, see what everyone's talking about. So he started playing it first. And then he's like, oh, yeah, like, I'm going to go switch the load over. Here, you just dick around with the catbird thing for, like, a minute. And I was like, okay. And, like, seriously, like, the, like, reverse psychology, getting your kid to eat their fucking peas.
Right, but, like, at that early part of the game, you're not actually a friend with Toriko,
right? But literally,
so doesn't,
like,
listen
this is,
to you yet,
right? But listen. So this is what happened. So, like, I'm remembering everything that you're telling me about this. So, like, I'm like, hey, we're out in the sun. We're near this puddle. I'm just gonna pet you. Could pet you, still petting you, and, like, pet him for a while. And then he played in the puddle, and I was like, okay, great. Right, and, like, let's go over here, let me yell at you, and, like, and I'm not getting frustrated, which is very surprising, because I do not have the patience the way that I used to, and that's honestly because my line of work really required me to be able to de-escalate my emotions and be able to be an observer of stuff and not to let my personal feelings, you know, manifest in any way, like,
right.
It's what I did in the schools. So here I am using all these techniques to not get mad at this thing that I'm like, come over here, and he won't. But I got to the point where I was able to issue commands to him, and he, you know, Trico listened to me. So then all of a sudden, like, the game started taking on a much steadier pace for me, because I'm like, hey, come over here, stand up, do the half jumpy thing, get me over here. Like, we have not done the, hey, I'm going to jump at you and I need you to grab me yet, because,
yeah,
you know, you were absolutely right about those who, if you have a fear of heights, there are parts of this game that are not for you. definitely not for me. And, like, so I got to the point where, and I'm going to talk a little bit about it, I guess, since I'm here.
Yeah.
Where his tail gets caught in a gate.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, go down the super long freaking hallway with all the disembodied warrior ghost spirit things. I'm all terrified about it. And, like, I kept leading them to Trico so that he would, like, swipe at them. And granted, they're, like, stabbing him. And I'm like, and he's mewling and he's crying. And I'm, like, so emotional over the fact that he's stuck. Like, I'm so mad that he's stuck. But we get through all that and we bond. And, like, and I'm rubbing him and all the blood's going away. And I'm like, good, we're bonding. This is really great. Like, and I'm pushing all the eye things off. And, like, I had to climb in through this weird hole. And I was at the top of this building. And I go through these rafters to get fucking down to then pull a chain to open the door so that he could come And but then there's the thingies, and I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? Oh my God. Very emotionally investing. Like,
I can see you smiling.
Because, like, the growth and the development of Bond is very, very prominent and established. Like, this is a great way to establish that bond between human and Trico.
Yeah.
Because, like, you realize just how much you both kind of depend on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, and the world. Like, there's so many intricate things in the world that I wasn't expecting to see. So, right before he got caught, like, I go through this gate. Because at first I thought, because I saw this lever way up high, I'm like, oh, I need him to get me up there so I can open the gate.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I'm, like, pointing at
it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And, like, I'm pointing at it because I'm like, I see it. And, like, I see him walk over near it. I'm like, and he's, like, kind of looking at it. I'm like, now pop up so I can climb you. And he just wouldn't do it. And I'm like, how am I going to get into this gate? And I didn't realize how thick the gaps between the bars were.
Yeah.
I could get through them with no problem.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, great. So, like, I go through that. And, like, I'm running through this area. And, like, there's these boxes. And there's this box full of the glowy stuff. And I'm like, how am I supposed to get him? And as I turn around, there he is. And I'm like, how the fuck did you get in here? Like, I had no idea. So I go back and I realize that it's very much like a cat door and it swings in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, but now it doesn't swing out. So right. I have to go up to that gate to be able to open it so he can get out.
Yeah.
And, and at that point, that's when you get the commands. And I was like, awesome. Awesome. Like, we're bonding. It's really good. It's like that scene in Knocked Up where, where, like, they have that awkward moment, but then there's, like, the bonding, and you're like, good, this is good for us. Like, that's the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that one freaking scene where, like, he was about to, when he ate me, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I saw the eyes go, I was like, oh, fuck, here it comes.
Yeah.
He's gonna get me. And he did. No, but I'm having a great experience with it, but I could definitely see people getting frustrated and not allowing the narrative to really kind of consume you. Because it's not really about you, the player.
And
it's really about you jumping into this character and developing that simpatico bond.
Right. It's really about
it's not
you
easy to obtain.
The story. It's not about points. It's not about health level. That's why you don't have a HUD.
Like, I mean, granted, a couple of those drops, though, like, I'm like, there's no way he would just be limping. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
like,
lightly
cradling
you
his arm,
dead.
It would be broken.
You are
if
dead.
If he were alive, he would be broken and crying because he can't move, and that'd be the end of that.
Right. Yes.
But whatever, I will disband belief for the relationship.
Suspend your disbelief.
I mean, the narrative is absolutely beautiful, and it really kind of makes me feel reminiscent of, you know, like getting your first dog, like getting your first puppy as a kid and like learning how, you know, to build bonds without that communication and like developing that internal language that, you know, you don't need words to express, you know, what you need to do or, you know, kind of in the same capacity of, you know, babies, not that I have any, but I imagine, you know, you bring this life in this world and it has no way of communicating and you have to figure out this way. And that's what helps establish that bond.
Mm-hmm.
Is that commonality of not being able to, you know, just be like, hey, mom, I'm hungry. Like, okay. Like, it's very intoxicating. So I'm having a great experience, but I can definitely see where some people would not, and they would find this far more.
Like I said, anyone who is used to playing, you know, what has become the traditional platformer puzzle game, this will be an infuriating game because the camera is very much like every other Ueda game. Okay, it is a frustrating extra character in the game, right?
That camera's like, fuck you.
But when you think about it, it makes sense, right? You are this small boy. You are trying to mount and get around this massive creature and this massive...
Not even that, but here you are with, you know, trying to develop your kung fu grip as you're, like, dangling off this giant, like, ruinous castle thing.
Okay,
like,
but the camera is just another character, much like Trico. You can't completely control your view. Think about it. If you're panicked, right?
There's a lot of stuff where I'm like, hey, I totally think I can grab this ledge, totally jump. Oh, I missed it by, like, a lot. The camera's like, no, you're not. So literally I was like, make sure, Amanda, you're right fucking in front of where you want to jump. Because, you know, you're not Nathan Drake here. You're not just going to magically grab onto.
There's no Nathan Drake in The Last Guardian.
Not at all. And I mean, and even though, like, you are holding on to things, like, you don't have, like, your character is not stable in that. Because, like during that scene where, like, I'm making all the corporeal, you know, ghosty things come at Trico. Yeah. Like, I'm like, let me get up on Trico so that they can't grab me. And he could do the swipey swipe. And then I'll heal him right quick because, you know, I'm kind of being a douche. Because he's already, you know, trapped. And here I am making him fight. But, like, I would, like, grab on him, and he'd be, like, bapping, and my character would, like, his hands would be locked in, but his rest of his body would just be, like, ragdolling.
Yep.
You know, and that's, like, another thing to show that, you know, like, you are a kid, and, like, your power is so much smaller than you actually, your capability is so much smaller than you, the player, think it should be, because we're trained to expect that these sprites, you know, their programming suggests completely different.
Right, because when you play, you know, most other platformers, you know, action-adventure titles, you're playing characters like Lara Croft and like Nathan Drake that are these adults with, like, superhuman upper body ridiculous
capability already.
Capability.
And I mean,
versus a 9-year-old child.
Who does not? Like, sure, he could climb trees and whatever, but I mean, like, you know, he's never had to, you know, be on the side of a thing that's collapsing and, like, jump with arms stretched like, hey, catbird thing that, you know, like, we're kind of buds right now. I see you looking at me. You're looking at me, but now I'm falling. I don't think you're going to grab me. Oh, fuck, he didn't grab me and I'm dead.
You did so, like, not grab me.
Like, there are some instances where, like, you know, that connection, that bond just ain't strong enough for him to go, you know what, let me just... And the second thing about that was, like, his head, like, dipped forward like he was going to grab me. So I was all like, yeah, oh, fuck. Because, like, at one point, I'm like, eh, he didn't get me. But it's okay. Because you get to try it again. Yeah. So it's fine.
And that doesn't happen all the time, by the way. It's not like it's a glitch someplace. And I firmly believe that it is, again, also a trick of the creator. Because there's no penalty for dying in this game. You don't have health points. You don't have a health bar. Most ridiculously
long jumps. They want you to develop that trust and understand that sometimes trust... No, because trust is a true
history. So I firmly believe, like, if you've been able to make a whole lot of good connections and you haven't experienced a death or a certain amount of deaths of where you've missed things going up to certain points, that you miss things so that you can experience it, so you understand. So I don't think that that's a glitch in the physics as much as... It's just teaching you a lesson. Cause, like,
an eventuality in life.
Correct. Because, like, I've watched multiple people play through The Last Guardian. And people that are blowing through it tend to get to places where they have more frustration with Trico. Like, getting the command and following the command. And one person, their first death that I saw was... there's a point in the game where you are running across this bridge. And it starts to collapse. It looks like it had been... like, used as a pulley system or whatever. And you have to jump off of it. And I believe it was the second playthrough video that was ever shared for Last Guardian at E3 last year, where you have to jump across. Trico tries to reach out to grab you, realize it's not going to make it, and you just keep following, and it lifts its tail up, and you catch its tail. And it brings you up on its side. So I remembered that, because I was like, oh my god, that is so cool, and I would, like, be losing it. I'm like, oh my god, the computer failed, and it didn't work. Now, I forget who it was that I was watching play through, but they got to that point, and up until that point in the game, they had not died, ever. And the tail moved like it was supposed to move, but they missed the tail. And they died. Like, the guy got all upset and, like, 8 shades of pissed, went back in, next go around, same jump from the same spot, nailed it, and he was blaming the game. And I didn't really think much of it until I started watching a couple other people play through the game, because I was really curious as to how other people were receiving the game. Because this is one of those games where everybody interprets things a little bit differently. Everybody either builds a relationship or doesn't build a relationship with the characters in the game and with Toriko differently. And so I really wanted to, like, see how people were receiving it, because I think I received it a little bit differently than most people. I think out of all the players that I watched, and I watched, like, 6 different people play through the game, the one that I had the most similar experience with the game to was Jacksepticeye. He and I... had, like, the same emotional reaction to the big moments in the game. Almost identical, which was really enjoyable for me. to experience. Because it's cool when you can go, yeah, like, you and I have this thing in common. That's cool with another person. And what was really interesting was that I noticed that Jack had frustrations in different places than I did. And he had difficulties in different places than I did. Places where I had, because I had two in my playthrough, I had two fails of Toriko actually grabbing me the way that he needed to. And one of them was resulted in me falling very, very far off a tower, which really messed up my vertigo.
Oh, I bet.
My baby vertigo. Just a bit. Jack had issues in different places. Like, he did not have the two places that I had issues with Toriko grudging me. He did not. We made the leap. In one of them, you can't. There's no other way to make the leap. There's just one way to make the leap. So I know it's not a glitch in the game because it didn't happen in his game. So it's really interesting to see. And I'm curious to hear what your interpretation of the game is, because right now the conversation that's going around in the game is everyone's trying to interpret what The Last Guardian is or what it means. And some people are like, it doesn't have anything to do with, it's just a throwaway title. It doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in the game. It's not, Toriko's not The Last Guardian and you're not The Last Guardian. And I'm like, I think you missed it. If you think that way, I think you missed the point of the game, because I have some thoughts.
I haven't fully finished it yet. So
yeah, so you need to. I know I ruined the end for you, but I don't think I really ruined it. Because the ending is also up for interpretation, and I've heard some people interpret the ending differently than I have, and I actually like their interpretation better than mine, so I'm starting to adopt it as my own. But I do think, again, you're not harmed by playing The Last Guardian if you haven't played Ico or Shadow of the Colossus. In all honesty, it just reinforces those two games. So if you loved either of those games, then you will love Last Guardian. If you played those games and you thought they were absolute rubbish, you're going to hate Last Guardian. So that's really kind of the bar of using and being exposed to those other games, is that they basically just prepare you for what this is going to be. Because the camera is no different in this game than it was in Ico. The level design is very intricate, but when you look back at Colossus on 2, which everyone forgets that Shadow of the Colossus was a PS2 game. At least I believe it was a PS2 game. I think it got remastered for 3, but it was a PS2 game. Shadow of the Colossus was very detailed for being a PS2 game. So those things didn't change. They just, the technology allowed them to be better. And everyone's like, well, then the camera should have been better. I'm like, the camera could have
been better. Once again, it's own character.
But I believe that it's its own character. And that's why it's a running thing in all the games. Because the camera didn't change from Ico to Colossus. And a lot of people complained about the camera. And you know that.
So clearly they're not listening to you.
But here's the thing. They are listening because
things. No. I'm just saying, like, to the jaded gamers who are like, fix your camera. Clearly they're not fixing the camera because it's, to them,
it's not broken.
Right. So therefore, you know, the more you complain, obviously, if no change has been done, there is a meaning and a reason and intention for the camera to behave that way.
Because at the end of the day, the camera is another character. And these games are about immersing you in a story and you being an active part of the retelling of that story. Like, in each of these games, you are retelling a story. Like, the story has already happened, and you're just experiencing a telling of this story. And so everything that is in the game is a character. And so they are very much more art than they are get platform, get points. Okay, next level. Get platform, get points, beat big boss. Okay, next level. Like, that's not what this game is.
But I'm enjoying it immensely.
Good.
Once I complete it, like, we'll have a full out discussion of our interpretations and stuff.
Hell
but
yeah.
I am resonating with it in a strongly positive way. But I've always kind of looked for that type of stuff in my narrative anyway. So I think I'm far more receptive to what does it mean, kind of. But anyway, that wasn't my big topic for today, and I know you're letting me go first, and my other two things are fairly short, so I'll just jump into those.
Oh.
So Yuri on Ice, you have bashed me over the head with this series, and
I've been trying to watch it for two months now.
And everyone on Facebook, everyone's like, oh my god, Yuri on Ice is like the newest hot thing. Oh my god, everyone should watch it.
Of all the things in the world, Amanda, that I've ever shared with you in life,
you've never been wrong. I'm not You've never been wrong.
But there's never been a recommendation that I've made to you that is so in your wheelhouse that it just boggles my mind that you had not watched it up to that point.
I hadn't.
Because Yuri is so your type of series.
Oh, it is. It is. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit right now. So, yes. But I finally, one day, I'm like, it was actually for Christmas, because this was the first Christmas where I wasn't with my fiancé, because I spent it with you, Ninja, and our faux bro, hot mess.
I think we can take the faux off the faux bro at this point.
Faux bro. No, I like it.
All right.
It makes it sound chicer to me. But anyway, this is the first.
Secret
this
to was the, you?
Like, more, like, chic.
Oh.
Like, more... chic, not secret.
Okay.
But this was the first holiday, you know, since stuff that I have not had my fiance here. And we usually go up to his family, and he was up there and I was here, and that was fine. But I was pretty much by myself all Christmas Eve. And I was like, well, I'm wrapping my few little gifts. And I know. I needed my alone time.
I mean,
it was a nice reflective time. Like, I got to do some purging.
Everybody needs some you time.
Yeah, so I was having my and Yule time.
But I didn't even mean to do that.
So as I'm prepping my greens, which were delicious,
making my
mac and cheese, which was also delicious,
so good,
wrapping my gifts, I was like, I'm going to put on, while I'm wrapping my gifts, I'm going to watch the first few episodes of Fury on Ice, which absolutely, 100% is my shit.
Like,
literally, if you took Kaleidostar, made them dudes, put them on ice...
And involved food.
And put food in there and then had some weird pseudo-lesbian and or gay intention, like sexual tension.
And some,
like,
it's not totally pseudo, my shit. I don't think.
No. I politely disagree.
Chris.
This is where, and I'm gonna bring it up.
Chris.
Why I'm saying
Chris.
It. So,
Chris.
But yes. The series is so up my alley. After I watched, because I literally watched the whole thing in a day, because I'm like, this is really good. Like, all this stuff is happening. Like, oh my God, now I know what a sow cow is versus a triple toe loop. Like, you get so, and like, I'm like, I want to learn how to skate. And then I realized, bitch, No, you don't, bitch. You just want to look pretty and, like, land everything, but you're not going to, because that requires effort and you're not a cartoon character. But Yuri, the main protagonist, Yuri, is very relatable. I love the fact that, you know, they play up on the whole, you know, he gains weight quickly. Like, he doesn't have to eat a lot in order to gain weight. And, like, he's actually kind of, like, you know, chubby when you first meet him. And, like, he's very human. Like, he's just very, you know, and, you know, he fell into skating because, you know, he's very passionate about it. I think he kind of had a crush on that girl who had a thing for Victor a little bit.
Yep.
And then, you know, so, like, we all have our motivations and whatever.
Yep.
But, you know, at the end of the day, like, he still had a genuine passion for it. And, like, you felt that. You felt the earnest. And you felt him wanting to grow and expand. And, I mean, granted, clearly very sheltered and never really addressed the warm and fuzzies that he may have had for girl. And then, you know, Victor, who is very emotionally, like, I think he's a very sexy Hufflepuff to me. Like, and I'm not just trying to make everybody Hufflepuffs, because I feel I'm a Hufflepuff.
You are a Hufflepuff.
I've taken several quizzes and it's telling me I'm Ravenclaw now. And I'm like, no.
I'm
smart.
Bro,
I'm smart.
I love you.
But, like, I'm so much more of a feely person than a critical person.
You're such a
But just a few quizzes. I'm like, no. I'm like, if the sorting hat asked me, I can help.
Because, like, right now in the phase that you are with the planning that you're doing, that's why you shifted.
Maybe. But, yeah,
you're a Hufflepuff.
Everyday general at rest, I'm a Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff.
But in my mind, I'm like, Victor is, like, a very sexy, Hufflepuff. Because, like, he's just very emotionally connected to everything that he does.
Oh, so, like, a Hufflepuff, it hurts. But go ahead.
But at the same time, like, but he's also very manipulative and calculating. So, like, he's got some Slytherin in there, too. But, like, I just think very sexy Hufflepuff. And, like, he's just like, hey, like, just completely inspired and motivated by how he felt watching Yuri. Like, the connection there was just inevitable. But, like, never once do they ever, like, say, hey, I like you, or have that confession. Like, it's all conversation that they're having without actually having it. So, like, it's So they want to invoke the feeling without coming out and saying it.
Hold up.
They don't. Like, they're always just like, I love watching you move. Your body makes music to me. But like, they're never like, hey, I like you a lot.
They exchange like, they never rings. Have. They, wait, did you watch the last episode? You watched the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Okay. And now he's going to go. And that's why the second season is going to be awesome, because Victor's going to come back and they're going to kind of compete. And it's going to be kind of like a battle of love, because, you know, if Yuri wins, then they're actually going to get married. And then we don't know what's going to happen if Victor wins, and they're going to, something else is going to happen. I know. I'm just saying.
All right.
That, like,
I'm just saying, the pseudo doesn't apply. It's just they subtle. Had a very unique it's not way pseudo. Of,
they had a very unique way of conveying all of that without having to be as blanketed as I like you, or having the confession scene where, like, I with the hands clenched and like the hands down and like the, you know, the really quick Daisuke, and like they completely wiped that off the map and have now made it like this just intrinsic feeling that they both just know. Like, it's very impactful to watch. And then on top of that, you know, you've got all the other characters who, you know, and they're the other skaters, I think, are also, you know, very fleshed out for back characters, because they all have their motivations.
Yep.
They all have their different routines, yep. But they all have, you know, very much like Westworld, they all have like this cornerstone. So you got the one guy, he's like, I want to bring ice skating to like India, and like, I want to be a role model, and I'm just super positive all the time.
Yeah.
And then
so
you've
adorable.
Got. You know, but like they
so
all
adorable.
He is, and he's just like, he's so cute. Like, if they did more magical boy animes, I'd want him to be in a magical boy anime, like so much. But like the characters are not—they're not just all one shot off. Like, oh, I'm the angry one, and I'm like, they're all very complex, which it's really hard to do in a series like this, where they want you to kind of focus on the protagonist,
because
then you kind
usually
of want to learn about everybody else, too.
Because they usually, in series like this, they set up the formula of, like, here's a super pretty one that everybody thinks is superficial, but really deep down has this, like, deep drive thing that he's doing, and this is just
like, I want to know what Victor's dark secret is, because he's got to have one.
Okay, and then, you know, they go
right now.
They go through the whole formula, and then you have the one that everybody wants to hate. And instead of following that formula, Yuri on Ice gives everyone really a reason for you to want to cheer them on and for them to be successful. Like, you, as you go through all the characters, really the only one for me that I didn't feel that way is, like, Chris, but you go through all the characters. No, I'm sorry. Chris is just a little hornball.
He's just, well, I mean, one routine, his fucking routine where his ass is literally in your face for all of it. I'm like,
no,
like,
every one of his routines gets him off. Number
He's
one.
He's all just like, oh, it's like, oh, stop with your O face. Well, that is not for the ice.
No, the reason why he's making his O face is because he's having an O. You did catch that, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so every routine.
The way he's talking about how I feel on the ice.
So every routine that he does. Oh, by the way, this podcast is not okay for kids. Every routine that he does, he climaxes.
Yes.
Every routine that he does. And
like, he's just so happy.
Just right as he gets to the end, okay? And then he's like, oh, I'm going to do it again. Okay, so number one. Number two, he's constantly thinking about Victor before that happens.
Yeah, because he hungry.
He's hungry and thirsty. He like,
hey,
you know.
Hey. But you
the
know
Mojave
what, Victor
Desert.
Does, but Victor doesn't, you know, like, doesn't try to kibosh that, because I think in Victor's mind, like, the fact
if
that, you know, these people are
if he can inspire people to be better,
right,
he's like, then I'm
better.
Doing a good thing.
Right. I mean, come on, he did like, the sexy photo shoot in, like, the hot tub pool thing with Chris.
Did.
Like,
yep.
And he could have easily been like, no, because he's a hornball. But no, he just let it happen.
Yep.
But anyway, like, it is very, it reminds me very much of Kaleidostar, because, I mean, you got your main character Sora in that.
Yes.
Who is already, you know, pretty much, you know, taught herself and for being self-taught is pretty amazing. Granted, you know, doesn't have a lot of the fundamentals that would, you know, make her stand out, which she develops late in later seasons. But like, you have that connection with Layla where, you know, they're not really sure what the development's going to be. And like, even though they're kind of rivals, Layla is also kind of mentoring her and like trying to feel out this middle grayish murky area. And you're getting the same thing in Yuri on Ice. I mean, I also kind of find it funny that it's called Yuri on Ice because, you know, Yaoi and Yuri.
That's why,
you
know, it's called Yuri on Ice.
Even though they're all dudes and it should be Yaoi on Ice, yep. Ayo, but yep. You're just like, what a play on words. And then there's two Yuris, so then, okay, I get it. Like, there's a lot of jokes here that are really good.
Yes.
I really like it.
It does not take itself too seriously.
Too seriously.
It knows exactly what it is, and it plays into it beautifully.
I mean, I love the fact that since I've seen the whole series, I've now gone on Facebook to find people who are actually physically skating Yuri's routines. Because, you know, it's one thing, you know, if they have someone mocap them and they put them in this show, but, you know, like,
no, I wanted it, like, rotoscoped.
So they have rotoscoped.
So those are real routines that people are skating.
Okay. Because at first I thought they were all like,
just,
you know,
like
they
the
weren't.
Opening is rotoscoped. No.
And I saw this guy, this Japanese skater, who was doing, he did Eros, he did Yuri's, the protagonist Yuri's.
Yes.
Eros on Love. And, like, he did the whole winky thing, and I was like, whoa, it translates well in the real space as much as it does in the show, mm-hmm. which sometimes you don't get. Like, the thing about, you know, Kaleidostar is, okay, yeah, it's kind of Cirque du Soleil, but there are just some things that you can't do.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell that that's an animation, but the ice routines in Yuri are rotoscoped. So the routines that you see done
are actual ones.
So they film someone doing that routine, then they trace.
I wasn't sure, but I mean, it felt real. And then when I saw actual people doing it, I'm like, now I have an even stronger appreciation for it because now I see, you know, how obtainable it is. Because, you know, I will never do the legendary great maneuver because, you know, I can't defy gravity.
No.
One, like, that will never happen. Mm. And I can never do the angel's maneuver because, once again, I'll never be weightless.
Right.
So, like,
You could do a triple toe loop. You break yourself into training to do it. But you could do
it. I could do it. I
a
could.
Triple toe loop.
The possibility is real.
Yeah.
It's much more obtainable.
It is within the realm of possibility to do.
Right. And that's what I like. So that's great. I can't wait for fucking season two because there's going to obviously be one because there has to be. I'd be really mad if they don't. It kind of makes me want to learn how to
do it. It was the number two top watched anime on Crunchyroll globally. So.
Oh, yeah. So there we go.
So.
And then lastly, for my little snippet is I've been experiencing this game on Steam. It's only $5. You know, I'm kind of into, like, RPG maker horror games, like Mad Father and stuff like that.
I like watching people play those games. I don't enjoy playing them, but, like, I enjoy watching people play Mad Father.
They're not as horror-stricken as, like, Corpse Party is so good. The universe in Corpse Party is amazing. But I like to try to find, like, the next, like, new one. Mm-hmm. Like, the next one that everyone starts kind of gliming onto. And that's really hard because some of them, you know, they're not that great. Right. And then there are some that are, like, amazing, like Mad Father. And Morona or Maroka, they're, like, it's an interesting series. That one is, too, if you ever want to take, if you ever want to watch anyone play through that. Manly Badass Hero did a great walkthrough of that game. And he has a beautiful, buttery voice that you just want to put on bread and eat all day and get fat, but being happy fat. So
make me happy.
His voice makes me happy. Ayo. Anyway.
Ayo.
So the game I want to briefly talk about because currently right now it's an episodic game, very much like Umineko or Higurashi Nanokoroni.
Yeah.
Or all the other subversions of that. But it's kind of like that. So it's episodic. And right now there's only two episodes out.
Stop you for like 1 second because I'm really surprised that you're not talking about the announcement.
Oh, the fact that they announced another one.
I fully expected you to start off the show with that.
No, because they haven't given us too much. We knew another one was going to come. We just didn't know when. And they just started developing for it. This, like, 2017, so it's just starting. So they don't have any concept. granted, I mean, I'm all about Higurashi and Umineko. I think I've devoted several of our shows to me just ranting about it.
Yes.
So, like, I need to find, like, a core group of, like, enthusiasts for when this new game comes out.
I'm sure there'll be a Facebook group for that.
I am so excited because the games are good. The games are really good. And they're very heavily text-based, but they're so worth the investment in time. But anyway, going back to what I'm talking about. So I've been watching Manly Badass Hero play so far. He finished the first episode chapter of this game, and he's now in the second one, but I haven't finished watching through that yet. But the game is called Hello Charlotte. So, like any game, you know, horror RPG game, you're going to be dealing with a lot of trigger things. It gets heavy very early. You're pretty much deciding whether or not you're really going to try to keep the sprite that you control from dying. So in this game, the player actually has a role, and you are a puppeteer, and you guide the puppet, which is Charlotte in this case for you, through her day. She has several tasks like getting up, getting breakfast, going to the bathroom, going to school, and that getting dressed, stuff like that. And those are like tasks, like those are quests that you have to do. Charlotte does all of this in a very secluded place called the house, and it does look like a house. And there are other people who live in the house, but they are not her family because she is not human. She is an entity. She is like, I want to say, kind of think of her like a robot, sort of. She has a childlike innocence, and she's curious, which we all know what happens when you're curious. It kills cats.
Curious robot's bad. Curious robot's bad.
Apparently.
Curious robot's bad.
So, but in the universe that she lives in, there are puppets are the most human-ish thing to still exist. So humans don't really exist anymore. But puppets are like the closest thing to humans, and all the other entities that are in this universe use puppets to try to understand humanity, if that makes any sense. So puppeteers get assigned to them, and then puppeteers pretty much try to live human lives to learn something about the human condition. Some puppeteers are really good at it. Some puppeteers are not. Some of them are kind of psychotic. And I'm not exactly sure what kind of puppeteer we are yet. Because in the first game, it's very, you're pretty much just exploring the house. And a lot of things in the house are trying to kill you. And you slowly begin to meet the other characters who reside in the house. So there's a scientist who's all about science. And you have to be careful about hanging around with him too long. Because eventually he tries to dissect you.
Look, scientists always go mad. Always.
They do. For doctors. Scientists, because usually scientists are doctors. But yes, so you got to be careful about hanging out with him too long because eventually he tries to kill you, and that can happen. He has a nephew who has the potential to be a very great scientist who, in the first episode, you are charged with killing time with. And he's very curious about you and has a lot of existential things he wants to talk to you about. And he's very much an emo weeboo that everyone just kind of wants to, like, make him feel better. His name's Felix, and you're just like, oh, I just want you to smile like one time, Felix, and the one time he does, it kills you because it's a horror. But like, it's very much an interesting test of how much weird can a game give you and how quickly can you regulate it to not feel weird. So there are all these different alien types that have like multiple eyes, and like the animation is very creepy. Like, it's very unsettling. I'd say like if Frank Miller hung out with Neil Gaiman for like 3 months and only had like one color pencil to like sketch with on walls, what he would draw would be what you saw in this game. So it gets a little trippy. Yeah,
that's weird. That's just
it's
weird.
A little weird.
Yeah,
like
honestly, that's too much weird to put together for me. Neil Gaiman and Frank Miller in a room. Yeah. Nope.
Right, with just one pencil.
What's going to come out of that is going to be very, very strange.
It's definitely on your, you know, standing on your head subversion type stuff. Most of the other characters that you will eventually meet, like, they don't have faces. So, like, literally, it's like a big scratch, like, scribbles around a face, because none of that actually matters. And in the first chapter, like I said, you're pretty much just exploring the house, and you're not going to school or anything yet, but you find out about this race of aliens called oracles, that they don't have a body and they tend to like to possess things. And this other group of aliens don't like the oracles because they tend to possess this particular race. So when a new oracle is about to be born, they all tend to mass suicide so that they cannot be inhabited by the oracles. And Charlotte, being very curious, somehow at the house finds like a wormhole that brings it to this place where, you know, an oracle has been born and like the mass murder suicide thing is happening. And they are only there as observers, so they cannot partake in anything. They just have to see it all happen. And at the very end of it, when they're leaving, they meet one of the aliens who's slowly dying, and they don't realize that it's an oracle. And the oracle possesses Charlotte at the very end of the episode, which has never happened. And people are worried about what will happen now that this puppet, which is not human, now has this very powerful entity possessing it. It's asleep when it does this. So it's not awake in the first episode. But now in the second episode, it is now manifesting itself in her mind and is talking to her. So now she has this other sense of sentience that she didn't have in the first episode. And a lot of the people who are in the house with her, you know, while still very polite to her, you could definitely tell they keep their distance because they're not sure what could happen, because this is the first time that this has ever happened. And they don't know how to, you know, like if they can exercise the oracle out, if the oracle is going to start fucking their shit up, like you don't know. But like they're still like, well, you know, exorcism and possession is something that, you know, in the history books of humans, people have said have happened. So we're just going to have this puppeteer navigate this puppet with this horrible unknown entity residing in her and just see what happens. And like I said, we've only gotten two episodes of the story, and they're all kind of essentially standalones. I think in the very last one, they're going to pull all of them in, very much the way Ryan Murphy said all the American Horror Stories weren't related, but now you find out that some of them are related.
Yeah.
I think they're going to pull that kind of string with this series, and something about each of the chapters is going to have it be its own story within the stories, which is, it's kind of an interesting layering if you ask me, which is why I'm intrigued by it. I have not been scared yet, because right now they're really playing around with what horror actually means. Like, there are no jump scares, so you don't have to worry about that if you were ever going to play it, Rochelle. The audioscape is unsettling but not scary yet. So, like, they're trying to just make you feel off-center so that when the big scary happens, you will receive the shock of fear the right way,
sure. I think. Let's go with that.
If there is a right way to fear. But the animation style is very creative. They use color very effectively, even though sparingly. So, like, things that have color, they want you to really focus on the fact that they do, because it has some type of significance, I feel, as an observer. I'm not too sure yet. But I'm very intrigued by it. And, I mean, for $5 on Steam, that's not bad. That is not a bad price for the level of thought and care that has come into this game. And once again, it's called Hello Charlotte. And if you have the time and you happen to like this genre of game, I suggest you check it out.
Okay. All right.
So that's all my shit. I'm done.
Okay. Well, there's all kinds of things that I could talk about. I could talk about Super Mario Run. I don't really have a lot of positive things to say about that. So I think I'll just leave it at that. No, I'll jump into this a little bit. So I got Super Mario Run on my iPhone. And I have an iPhone 7 Plus, so I have a larger screen iPhone, which I do think helps a lot with the game than playing it on a smaller screen, like a 5S or something like that. Got it day one and jumped in, and it's interesting in how it's organized in that, you know, if you haven't seen the game before, the way that it works is that Mario is constantly in a state of motion, and so you simply tap the screen to make him jump, and the way that you have to traverse the level is getting your jumps timed right to, you know, get around bosses, kill enemies, get power-ups and whatnot, and make it to the end of the level. Very straightforward. But the levels do become very tricky in that because Mario is always in a state of motion, you have to think about getting through the level differently. Like, there are pause blocks that you can hit where you can kind of look a little bit ahead of yourself of where you're going to figure out whether or not you want to try to make the jumps to get up to the higher level, which will probably reward you with a red coin and additional coinage, or if you want to, you know, traverse the lower level, which will probably be easier for you to traverse in many cases in the early worlds levels versus in some of the later levels, there are actually more enemies and more tricky jumps that you have to make to avoid pitfalls and whatnot. So it's clever in that way. The game also adds on Toad Rally, which basically lets you compare your getting through a level to another player who's playing the game getting through, and you get rewarded style points. So the more flourishy and better timed your jumps, the more coins that you get, the higher you're ranked in the rally. And if you beat the score of the other player, then you get an extra reward. Some of that might be tickets, because you need tickets to play rally. So if you're not earning enough tickets, you have to buy them. So that's where the in-app purchase comes in. You can also buy in-app purchases for money, because when you're outside of the Mario world where you're going through and traversing the regular worlds like we're used to in a Mario game to ultimately get to Bowser, get the princess back, you can be in the Toad world where you have to spend the money that you earn to build buildings in the Toad Village because you're trying to return Toads to the Toad Village. And so Toads need houses. So red Toads need red houses and green Toads.
Why they gotta be so picky?
It's so segregated, but whatever. I probably played through up to World 3, which is half of what you explore, if I remember correctly, in the game. I will say that I put Super Mario Run down faster than I put Pokemon Go down.
Wow.
So let me, and you know how I feel about Mario games.
I know.
I love the new mechanic of, you know, because Mario is on the move all the time, you have to think of getting through the levels differently. I love that mechanic of it, but ultimately, I'm watching Mario move in a world that is slowly revealing itself to me and just tapping my thumb. And I'm 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 tapping my thumb. I'm not.
Are you tapping your thumb?
And I'm not doing, you know, any multi gestures, you know, at least with Pokemon Go, you know, I am searching the world. I'm trying to go to new places to find these Pokemon. I'm swiping, I'm battling, you know, there's multiple things that I'm doing in the game. In Super Mario Run, you tap in your thumb. And you tap in your thumb. So its novelty wears off very quickly. That's not to say that, like, this game probably in the hands of, you know, anybody that's, you know, 14 and younger wouldn't be super fun and entertaining. Like, it's definitely a game, like, if I had kids and we were going on a driving trip, I would want this loaded up on their iPhones or their iPads to play, because I know that they would stay engrossed in it. But I lost interest in it and very quickly, just because, you know, even though you have Toad Rally and you have these worlds to get through, you continue to do the same thing at all times. Except when you're, you know, placing pieces in your village. Then you can use your index finger and place in the predisposed positions where you can put objects, flowers, or homes, and hopefully keep your toads happy. So I went ahead and did the $10 unlock to get all things, and you know, here and there, when I'm sitting in an airport or something, I might turn it back on, you know, and play a level here or there. But I'm glad
Nintendo come to the iPhone.
But this isn't the every time I'm not on my phone checking email or, like, looking at my social, I'm in Super Mario Run. I'm just not.
Hmm. All right.
Like, I am more apt to turn Pokemon Go back on than to turn Super Mario Run on. That's just me.
Wow. Okay, then.
And you know how I feel about Pokemon Go.
Yeah, I know. I do know how you feel or not feel, depending.
Yeah. So there's that. Like I said, trying to be more positive, 2017. There's a lot of things to look forward to this year. And that's really what I want to talk about here as we work our way to the end of our first podcast of the new year. So there's not a lot going on in gaming right this minute, but there's a lot coming this year. You know, we've got, hopefully, finally, Cuphead.
Yep.
Which I've been looking forward to Cuphead for quite some time now.
For a while now.
Yep. A couple years now. And, you know, everything I see of it more and more, it looks like it's going to be a really fantastic game when it comes out. And I think that the team kind of looked at, you know, some of the things that they had been promising. And after everything that happened with No Man's Sky, I think a lot of independent companies who are bringing their games and getting the AAA treatment from developers really decided to take more time to make sure that their things were really polished and they were delivering on the things that they talked about delivering. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that the team took more time with Cuphead, because I think that what we'll get in the end will be everything that we have seen up to this point, and that'll be great. But we've got Cuphead coming in 2017. We've got Crackdown 3 coming in 2017.
Oh, God. You're going to be obsessed for a while.
I'm going to be obsessed for quite some time. You know, we've got the remastered Bulletstorm coming, which I'm also
a lot of your time.
Quite excited about. We know Red Dead Redemption 2 is coming. Like, when you start going down the list of things that are on the horizon, you know, you've got the Horizon Zero Dawn game coming.
Yep, and which I'm very interested about.
It looks beautiful. I still don't know if it's a game for me yet or not. I know it's a game for you. I don't know if it's a game for me, sis, yet. But I continue to get a little bit more and more convinced, because it feels very Far Cry to me. And as you know, I didn't finish the last two Far Cry games. They just...
Right.
Like, I like the look of Primal, but it was just too much to focus on and manage and just do. And I didn't finish 4. So, you know, we've got those things coming that we know are on the horizon. Volition's been very quiet. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
What was the last Saints Row game that you played?
Get Out of Hell.
For 4, right?
Yeah.
So we haven't had a new Saints Row, like, built for new console game in a while. We had the remaster, you know, because they did the President's Edition where they remastered 4 and added the Get Out of Hell stuff, and I forget what the other mission was, but they added all that. But there hasn't been a new Saints Row game in a bit. So we're kind of due for Saints Row 5, right?
Right.
It's about time. You know, Yubi said that they took some time off, and that's why we didn't get a new Assassin's game last year.
Which I think is for their benefit.
It is, which means that we should then be due for one this year. You got Ghost Recon Wildlands coming out this year. There's a lot coming this year.
Sorry.
You know. I mean, that Prey game from Bethesda, like, there's, when you start
thinking about... I hope Prey's another Doom!
When you start looking at, you know, the lineup, like, it should be a pretty strong year. And that doesn't even count, like, the indie stuff that we're not even aware yet of popping. So, I'm looking forward to 2017 being the year of the gamer, because it seems like the big three are focused on games again. You know, you've got Nintendo's new system that's supposed to drop in March. The Switch. We still don't know all the details yet about the Switch. But the Switch is coming. And the Zelda game is coming to the Switch. And that will move a chunk of people to get the platform and get the game. You know, I'm very close to trading in my Wii and my Wii U to get a Switch. I don't know if I will play the Zelda game or not. It took me a while to finish Twilight Princess. And I absolutely loved Twilight Princess. But I don't know if I got the time. I still don't know where the hell the Kingdom Hearts game is. They keep coming out with the like remixes and shit. And I'm just like, will you please just shit or get off the pot and give me Kingdom Hearts 4?
You mean 3?
Yeah. Is it 3?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it? No.
Yeah.
Is it 3? I thought it was 4.
No. Because we have 1, 2... 1.5, 2.5, Dream Drop Distance.
Oh.
Birth Over Sleep. 358 in 2 days.
Right. See, there's just so many of them. I thought we must be up to 4 by now.
No, it's 3.
It's straight up 3 that we're still waiting for.
Yep.
Did you mention Birth by Sleep?
Do I imagine Birth by Sleep?
No. I said, did you mention Birth by Sleep? Wasn't that
Yes, one? I said Birth. Yeah, yes, okay. Birth by Sleep. Yes.
It's just like...
I mean, if I could birth a baby by sleep and not have to be awake, I would do that. But I'm sure people would. And I have birth over sleep, and I have dream drop distance, and I have 358 over 2 days, whatever the fuck that meant. Didn't play them, but I have them.
Why couldn't you just said that it was like a year over 2 days? But it's not even a full year. It's like,
exactly. So I think that's what that means. It's like literally
358 days over 2 days.
Yeah.
So you basically are playing like almost a year over the course of 2 days. That's what they're trying to say. I'm just like, will you just stop making it confusing? Just say 365 over two and everybody be like, oh, it's a year over 2 days. Got it. Like, stop. Just come out with three, which I thought was four at this point because there have been so many games.
Nope, it's just three.
And then, you know, the remixes of 2.5.
I mean, granted, the lady who did there another one that they did that was like two is doing three.
Wait, but isn't there one that was like remix 2.8 something? And I'm like, really, guys?
Like, they couldn't be 2.5. It's 2.8 to make people think that we're very close to three. Like, bitch, please.
Exactly. Just do it or be like, actually, we've stopped. We're not going to do this. And just let everybody else get on with their lives. Or fucking come out with three. Like, Last Guardian came out. Come on, KH3. Like, be real. But as I start, like, looking down the line of all the games to come, I'm excited for this year. Because there should be some serious, real excitement across all the platforms. Whether you're hardcore or casual, or even mobile. And I'm just talking consoles here because PC is like a whole nother realm, you know, with Play Everywhere now on the Xbox, like being able to pick up a game and start it on your PC and be able to pick up on your console exactly where you left off on your PC and vice versa. That's pretty cool. You know, with people talking about making cross play across platforms a reality, that's also cool because, you know, there are so many third party games now that I would love to be able to, you know, pick up Overwatch on my Xbox and be able to play with some of my friends that are playing on PS4. The big one for me is Destiny because I made a couple of donations during Extra Life when everyone was doing their Extra Life runs. And in one of the goodies that I got for making my donation, and I can't remember who it was, but they gave me a code to download the Iron whatever husky version of Destiny, whatever the current version was at the time before their holiday stuff went off, on the Xbox. And I have a lot of friends that play Destiny on the Xbox. And I thought, well, you know, it's been a while since I played Destiny, and a big chunk of my clan doesn't really run Destiny that hard anymore. Like, I didn't play the last raid. I didn't play the raid after House Wolves. So I haven't touched any of that. I was like, it might be cool to spin it up on my Xbox and play with some of my friends who are on the Xbox side. Especially because there's so many things that the PlayStation version gets first that they don't have yet on the Xbox. Might be fun, spin up, you know, new character or whatever. So I spun up a new hunter and I played the first two missions so I could get to the Earth. And got in there and was just so overwhelmed by like all the things that there were to do. I was like, oh my God, there's no way. Like, I can't start this over from scratch again.
I give you a lot of credit for even, like, going, like, getting it for your other console and even, like, debating going back. Yeah, like,
and I spun up a hunter. Cool-looking hunter, by the way. Just, like, I got in and, like I said, I did the first couple missions and it was this, you know, it was like riding a bike. I was right back in there. But, like, I got to the Earth, and I was just looking at, like, all the missions that I have to run. And, of course, I haven't done it on the Xbox, so getting, you know, back into the rhythm of my aim and my shoot, my buttons and what they do and all that kind of stuff and getting my light up. And I just started, like, thinking of, like, all the things I got to do. So, like, I got to get through all these missions to get through the core story first. Then I'm going to be able to do the run-up to get my light up so that I can run raids. And then I started thinking, oh, my God, like, I don't at least have, like, my guild. So I don't have people to run me through and let me just, like, hang in the back and get through the raids so I could get the good gear. I was just like, holy shit, this is going to be a problem. Do I want to do all this? And then I was like, or I could just go back to my PlayStation version, where I have a legit level 40 hunter that's just, you know, baby squishy on the light, and I could get, like, a couple of my dudes to run me through, and that would mean that I would have to, like, watch the raid videos so I know what to do or know where to stand, because I'm, like, squishy on the light. Like, I just start running through all these, and I'm like, or I could just finish Dishonored 2. And that's where I went. So I'm close to finishing that game instead. So I don't know that I'll jump back into Destiny, because I've just been out of it for so long. Like, right. It really would be a job. Like, I would need to spend a weekend.
Just you need more than a weekend.
Yeah. I would need to spend a couple weekends just to get my character's light level up where I could, like, run with people again. And I'm just like, But there's so many new games coming out, though, so I don't want to do that. Plus, there's so many backwards compatible games, and that's the other thing that I'm trying to look at more. So as part of my New Year's Gamers resolutions, because I only completed 3 out of 5 last year. So this year, I'm going for the 4 out of 5. I'm being realistic.
I'm glad to hear the realistic expectations coming out of your mouth. I'm happy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm trying. So my first gamer's resolution is to, every time I feel like jumping back into Destiny, that I'm going to pick a different game to play on a different platform. So if I feel like, oh, this is the time to, like, go and get back and do the weekend grind to go do this, I'm going to pick up something else, whether it's a backwards compatible game to write about on the site, or to pick up something on my computer to play. So, as an example, I had the urge, you know, because I have a long weekend here. I had the urge, like, okay, well, if I'm going to pick a weekend to start, like, doing the run for Destiny, like, this is the weekend. And instead, what I've decided to do is I went and I looked at the backwards compatible list for the Xbox One to see what of my disc-based games that I still have in my hot little hand that I could play that would be interesting, you know, to play on the new system. And Mass Effect 3 is one of them. And as you know, I love Mass Effect 3.
I know.
I have major reservations about Andromeda, so to kind of...
Yep, me too, and a lot of other people do too.
To satiate my Mass Effect need, I'm going to actually go back and I'm going to play Mass Effect 3 on my X1. And I'm pretty sure, because I'll be starting it up from disk, it won't be picking up my old save. So it should give me characters that I accidentally got killed off in my group. Ooh. Basically, I just want Tali back because I want the ability to sex Tali.
I remember your mess up.
And my second game didn't remember my first game save, so it gave me Caden, even though I saved Ashley. So I'm hoping I don't get Caden, I do get Tali, and all things are good. So that way I don't have to sex Garrus again. Not that I have a problem sexing Garrus. I loved sexing Garrus, but I really wanted to sex Tali, and because I couldn't, that's why I went after Garrus, because they won't let you sex Samara. So I'm going to play Mass Effect 3 again, and then my next big game that I want to play after that, and I've been debating this on whether or not I'm going to do it or not, but as another one of my resolutions, I do want to play at least 2 computer-based, you know, PC games, because I have a Mac. 2 computer-based games this year. Civ may be one of them.
Okay.
And I don't know what the other one will be yet, but I did reactivate my Steam account. So I've already actually achieved one of my game resolutions because I reactivated my Steam account before we got on this podcast. And I already have League, so League doesn't count because I do play some League. I suck at it. I run bot all the time and I'm bad. But, so that... Another one, and again, it's staying on the list until I actually achieve it, is to play a racing game for more than 10 minutes.
Forza.
It's installed. I just have to play it. So, PC game, don't go back to Destiny, racing game, play a horror game of some type for at least 5 minutes. Whether that's console or PC, I don't know. So, you know, where the RPG makers on Steam comes in, that may actually solve 2 of my resolutions if I can find one that, again, doesn't have crazy jump scares. But I do enjoy those ones. And so then for my 5th resolution, and you're actually part of this, Panda.
Oh?
More Couch Coop.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Whose couch?
It could be your couch. It doesn't have to be my couch.
Okay.
Because the couch appears a little cold. I have blankets, but, you know. But more couch coop.
Okay.
Because, you know, as much as I enjoy playing multiplayer games with people and getting exposed to people, one of the things that I really enjoy, and it's only when we do episodes where we're playing together, is I do enjoy being in a room together with somebody playing a game that is two-player. So whether that's fighting games or other games where we can actually co-op, I don't know. But more couch coop in 2017. Those are my resolutions.
I think those are all good ones, too.
And they're all positive because they promote, you know, doing things outside of my wheelhouse and doing more things with people in the real world. So, again, more positive 2017. Those are my resolutions. The last thing that I want to put out there before we go is that, you know, we talked at the beginning of the episode about being done with 2016, and 2016 for a lot of people was not a great time. And, you know, when you look at the year as far as, you know, celebrities that passed away, 2016 was a real harsh one because it took a lot of, I think, many people's fan favorites or people that really impacted their youth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could do a whole episode on so many of the people that passed away. You know, Alan Rickman and Prince and David Bowie and Leonard Cohen. Like, the list starts getting real deep and real long. But one that was personally very difficult for me was Carrie Fisher. For a lot of reasons.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, everyone has a different opinion of Carrie Fisher or a different reason why they love her. For many people, it's because of her portrayal of Princess Leia in the Star Wars movies. And, you know, because for a lot of people that I know, that was like the first female in a sci-fi movie that they had emotional feelings for. Or sexual awakening to, I mean, whichever way you want to slice it. For me, I think what I appreciated most and why Carrie Fisher meant so much to me is because she wasn't like a picture-perfect Hollywood celebrity. You know, she battled with mental disorder, with alcoholism, and she didn't shy away from any of it. She owned every mistake that she ever made. She was very honest about her imperfections and let people in where it would be very difficult and survived all of it. She was a absolutely brilliant writer, so clever, so funny. If you have the chance, her special Wishful Drinking, I think is still airing on HBO. If you have it, it is absolutely worth watching. It is, to me, always so brave when you let people into situations that when you think about them, are really situations that should break you and make you want to cry and hit it with hilarity and laugh at it so it doesn't damage you. And mm-hmm. I appreciated that so much about Carrie Fisher. She took no shit. She gave no fucks because in the long run, the majority of those things that people were trying to get her to give fucks about and to take shit about don't matter. And she focused on the things that did. And
that did.
So, you know, when the new Star Wars movie came out and Leia was no longer Princess Leia, but General Organa, that hit me so hard, again, on a personal level, because it wasn't about being a damsel in distress that needed to be rescued. It was about accepting who you are and defining who you are, determining to be the rebel and lead the forces and step into that all-important leadership role as opposed to relying on the Force and being able to use the Force because, you know, she is a Skywalker. But instead of choosing the path of Jedi, she chose the path of a general. And that also hit me, again, as I've gotten older in a different way. So I miss Carrie Fisher. I miss all the things that she would have been able to bring to the world if she had made it past 2016. I look forward to seeing what the next Star Wars movie looks like because she had wrapped all of her scenes. So in some way, we still have one more performance from her to see, yet to see. And I'm excited to see what that looks like and remember the fiercest female warrior that I grew up with in Carrie Fisher. So she will be missed but celebrated, as will so many other people that we lost in 2017. So I'm taking the positive side of that celebration and in doing my part to try to be the fiercest female warrior version of myself that I can in the year. And I hope that each of you, whether Carrie touched you in the way that she touched me or not, take some part of that and try to be the fiercest version of yourself in 2017 that you can.
Well said, sis.
Yeah, I think so. So I'm going to do an abridged version of the business because it's a new year and we're running long. Check out all of our sites. ElectricSisterhood.com, B3Crew.com, SmashRook.com, IssuesProgram.com, NerdCrave.com. We cover all the things that are nerdy in the world. Independent music, video games, manga, anime, comic books, TV show and film recaps. All of our sites, across all of them, there's something for everybody. Many of us have shows. Make sure that you bookmark our sites, that you get our feeds, and you get our shows. You can find our show, The Eshcast, in iTunes, either on the desktop or on your iOS device through the podcast application. You can also find us on Vogue Network, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, pretty much any podcast aggregator on the planet. You can find our podcast, so make sure that you get it, you subscribe to it, and you'll get our brand new episodes every week when we put them out upon the web. Same thing with B3Crew.com, and you can find our homie Hamsterman doing live streams every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on his channel, twitch.tv/Hamsterman2049, playing new games and old games. You can join in the chat and check him out. Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube is absolutely hilarious. You definitely need to make sure that you check that out. We love what we do, and we hope that you enjoy it as well. Make sure that you hit us up on social, on Facebook, facebook.com/Land of Esh, on Twitter and Instagram at ESH News. We're also available in Apple News on your iOS device. Just search for Electric Sisterhood and add us to your favorites, and we'll have our new articles and reviews available for you in your For You section as soon as we put them out on the web. We enjoy what we do. We enjoy our community. You guys are absolutely the reason why we do what we do. So thank you for that, and thank you for celebrating our 10-year anniversary with us this year and making us feel old but also appreciated. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time, guys,
keep it classy.